Now that we've gone through all the different things that affect the hormones, we've gone through the nutrients, we've gone through the foods, we've looked at the biochemistry, we've looked at the anatomy and physiology, we're ready to look at how do you address specific hormone imbalances. In addition to a general approach, which I think everybody with a hormone imbalance or who presents with something that looks like hormone imbalance should be taken through, there's some specific things based on specific conditions. While I'm not a big fan of a this for that approach or having a set quote-unquote protocol for a particular condition, we're working with a person, not a disease, and we have to remember that. But there's guidelines of things that you can look for. Let me just remind you that the information in this presentation is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional. It's also not medical advice. It's just a sharing from my knowledge and information that I've gathered over the years, research I've done, clinical experience I've had with thousands of patients. It's my sharing to you. And what I recommend that you do is really research. Look at your own body. If you're under the care of a medical practitioner, be sure to bounce these ideas off of them before you make major changes to your diet and lifestyle. So first thing is looking at what are all the things in their lifestyle that can be causing hormonal disruption. Top of my list all the time is stress. And it goes back to that chart that we looked at, right, with the pregnenolone at the top. And now you've gone through that in a lot of different ways and gyrations. You don't have enough of the raw materials. There's no way you're going to have proper hormone balance. The stresses in the system, in the diet, the sugars, the food allergies, gluten, casein, the effects of those foods on the system and creating stress in the system, like a threat to the system, but also inflammation. And again, the casein and the way that the dairy disrupts hormone balance as well. Pathogens in the system, always looking for that. Sometimes there's hidden sources of pathogens that people don't even know, and it's putting us constant stress. All of those top four are really all stress. I separated stress at the top as sort of the big umbrella, but really eating foods that are stressing the system, having pathogens in the body, traumas, old traumas, those are all in the big umbrella of stress. Gotta look at that first. It's the first thing. Change the way that their body's producing cortisol. Change their relationship with cortisol, and you're on your way to having some balance in the rest of the hormone chain. The next thing we're going to look at, and you should be thinking about, is hormone resistance. Hormone resistance is really common, and you know about it. We've talked a lot about insulin resistance. We've talked about thyroid resistance. We talked a little bit earlier about progesterone resistance. There's even estrogen resistance. I'll show you some evidence that was recently found and written about in 2013, the first time ever that somebody wrote about estrogen resistance. And resistance to hormones is very common. And the way you know that the person is resistant to hormones is that you do the tests and all the tests look normal. Remember when we looked at thyroid and we said all the lab tests look normal, but they still have thyroid symptoms? You don't send them off with a prescription for Prozac thinking that they just have a mental thing going on. You've got to look and say, well, what else could be going on? Hormone resistance. The cells aren't picking up the levels. Same thing can happen with estrogen and progesterone. You test them, it looks fine. The urine looks fine. The blood looks fine. The saliva looks fine, yet still they're having symptoms. You've got to suspect hormone resistance. Eating under stress is a huge cause of hormone problems. Eating at the wrong times creates ebbs and flows of hormones at the wrong times. Not getting sufficient sleep, not renewing your hormones during the night, not detoxifying during the night, all of this stuff creates problem. Eating under stress causes your digestive tract to shut down. You don't absorb nutrients properly. You don't have the right nutrients that you need for hormone balance. Same thing with insufficient chewing. We've gone over these things before. Medications. You got to ask them, what are they on? Because certain medications can disrupt hormones. For example, if somebody's on birth control pills, we know that that's a direct hormone, not inhibitor necessarily, but it's a direct interference with hormones because it is hormones, taking hormones. But birth control pills disrupt all sorts of things throughout the body. It disrupts the levels of certain nutrients. It disrupts the normal flora in the gut. And so if you've got somebody who's on birth control pills and they're trying to get over some problems, you better be looking at either helping them to get to the point where they'll go off the birth control pills, or that they're at least replenishing with the nutrients that they need to help to keep them safe. Toxins in the food or food combining, nutrient imbalances, even the measles vaccine can disrupt the hormone balance, and certainly pancreatic insufficiency. So what are some of the symptoms you're going to see that would clue you in that maybe the person has hormone imbalance? Some of these are symptoms and some of these are diagnoses that they may tell you that they already have. So they may say, I have PMS, or they may say, I just become a bear at the time of my period and nobody can live with me. They probably would say they have PCOS, or they might say, oh, I can't get rid of the acne. And I have this weight around my middle and I don't eat a lot, but I'm gaining weight and I can't lose it. Or I'm starting to get chin hairs. Those are signs of PCOS. Fibroids. They may have been told they have fibroids. Generally, they would not know that they have fibroids unless they've been diagnosed, unless they're feeling like pain in the groin area that's unexplained. Endometriosis, same thing, really erratic periods, really painful periods. Dysmenorrhea. They're not going to say I have dysmenorrhea. They're going to say I have cramps. It hurts so much when I have my period. So you want to be looking at asking the right questions to get a sense of whether they're, it's obvious if they say I have horrible periods and I lose a lot of blood and I have a lot of pain that they have a hormone imbalance. Loss of libido. Oftentimes loss of libido comes from stress, from too much cortisol affecting the adrenal pathways and then affecting what's left over of the pregnenolone to make its way down to estrogen, progesterone, testosterone. See, those are dispensable hormones. We've got to stay alive and that affects it. They may be having hot flashes, and sometimes it's men having hot flashes, and sometimes it's women that aren't even of menopausal age that are having hot flashes, and then you have to dig in and find out why. Anxiety that's not explained by other reasons, and maybe they've tried various anti-anxiety medications or anti-anxiety herbs or neurotransmitters, and they're not getting better. You might suspect that it's their hormones. Insomnia. Some cases of insomnia are elevated cortisol. Right? And that's a hormone imbalance, but not a sex hormone imbalance. But sometimes it's a deficiency of progesterone, and progesterone can do wonders for balancing that. Fatigue and irritability, lots of other possible causes. But when you see a combination of all this stuff and you see a cyclic pattern to anything, migraines that always happen at a certain week of the month, irritability and crankiness that comes before their periods, pain that occurs right in their mid-cycle. So it's asking the questions about how the symptoms are presenting themselves. So infertility, well, obviously there's going to be probably most likely a hormonal imbalance, but sometimes it's an immune system problem. There are autoimmune type manifestations that affect fertility. Menopausal symptoms, obviously, excess testosterone symptoms would be things like facial hair in a woman, acne in a man or a woman, and then hoarseness of the voice happens in women. So testosterone deficiency will usually present itself as inability to put on muscle, inability for a man or a woman to actually put on muscle, even though they're going to the gym and working out. So let's touch upon hormone resistance and how you can deal with it, and then we'll look at some specific conditions. Insulin resistance, we already know about. Thyroid resistance, we already know about. We talked about it. Progesterone resistance, estrogen resistance, and leptin resistance. These are the most common hormone resistances, but you can have resistance to any hormone. And it basically occurs when the receptors can no longer accept the signal from the hormone and respond adequately. They've either shut their ears, like we say in insulin, that's too much of that hormone has been bombarding them for a long period of time, and they shut down. We see thyroid resistance result from people being on thyroid medication for extended periods and not really addressing the true cause. If they're on thyroid medication truly because their thyroid's not producing enough, then they're in good shape. But if they're on thyroid medication because they had receptor resistance and you add more thyroid medication, it's not going to change the problem and it can make it worse by making the resistance worse. Same thing with progesterone, right? People will just run out and get the progesterone creams. If they have progesterone resistance, that may not be the best approach. Estrogen resistance, the same thing. Really recent, up until just a few months ago, there were no cases of estrogen resistance. And then leptin resistance, which is serious because leptin gives the signal to stop eating. And people who are overweight produce a lot of leptin because they're overeating and their fat cells are producing. And people with a lot of fat cells produce a lot of leptin. So what happens? The hypothalamus gets resistant and it no longer hears the signal. And then the appetite doesn't turn off. In general, in dealing with hormone resistance, if a hormone balancing protocol isn't working, use the nutrients and lifestyle to restore receptivity. It's kind of silly to keep giving somebody thyroid medication after 15 years of not responding to it and constantly increasing the doses. It's not a good idea, and it can actually make the situation way worse. So this is just a case that was recently reported in the New England Journal of Medicine. It's an 18-year-old female who had elevated blood levels of estrogen and the signaling stopped. She did a normal lab test and she had signs of estrogen deficiency. This was found at the Medical College of Georgia and Georgia Regents University. And so it's really classic if they have normal levels in their blood, but they have signs. But if they also have been supplemented, they have been on bioidentical hormones and nothing's happening. The levels are up, but they still feel crappy. They still are having the hot flashes. They're still having the weight gain, the irritability, the crankiness. They're still having the symptoms. You've got to look at hormone resistance. This is going to set you apart from other practitioners. Totally going to set you apart. Why? Because hardly anybody's looking at this. This is cutting edge. And you can help people solve their problems that other people can't help them solve. So how do you overcome the resistance? Well, if you've got high competitors to certain hormones and you've got imbalances, you've got to look at that. If not, or in addition to, you want to look at B6 and iodine because that seems to help most of these resistance problems. And then specific nutrient enhancers for each receptor. So for example, with progesterone resistance, iodine and vitamin E in the form of mixed tocopherol, really helpful. In insulin, we've talked about before, chromium, magnesium, DHA, niacin, zinc, a whole host of nutrients can help restore resistance. In thyroid, well, thyroid, it's really important to de-stress and get the cortisol levels down because cortisol damages thyroid receptors, but also so does vitamin A. And high levels of homocysteine damage the receptors. So you want to look at bringing the homocysteine down. And that's generally done with B6, B12, and folic acid, preferably in the activated, methylated, or P5P. High competitors would say you've got high levels of estrogen and you've got low levels of progesterone. The estrogen is a competitor. Or it could be that you've got high levels of xenoestrogens or plant estrogens, but usually it's the xenoestrogens, the environmental stuff that's high, which is competing for the binding sites of the progesterone and the estrogen. And that's more likely to be the case. So some of the female hormone imbalances that we see are that how they present would be PMS, irregular menses, excessive or scant menses, menopausal symptoms, excess testosterone symptoms like the facial hair and the acne, and xenoestrogens, which you'd be looking at in their environment, like cleaning up their environment. So some natural approaches to PMS, premenstrual syndrome. So what you want to do for that, a lot of times it's easy stuff like B6 and magnesium, and that's where you need to start. Some of the other nutrients that can be helpful, magnesium, B6, vitamin C, niacin, vitamin E, selenium, evening primrose oil. So these are a core group of nutrients that help across the board with lots of different hormonal imbalances. So it's a great place to start. I like to do the bowel tolerance on vitamin C and magnesium if you can. Avoiding excessive protein, because the excessive protein causes you to become too acidic, causes too many ammonia byproducts, and that affects the hormone binding. Avoiding excessive potassium, which we talked about earlier, how you want to have enough potassium, but too much can affect the conversions. acupressure points. This is great stuff. It's not just about nutrition. Acupressure is amazing for PMS, and these are some of the points that you can have people teach them how to stimulate, teach them how to tap the points or rub the point, massage them, or get one of those little magnet sets with the little band-aid and you put the magnet or a bead on the thing. You can even use seeds. You can use like a larger seed, say a quinoa, piece of quinoa, and put it over acupuncture points and band-aid it on, and that can be very helpful as well. There's some lumbar bladder points. The bladder meridian runs along the lumbar spine, just outside the lumbar spine, so outside of the spine itself, and you can just point, just use those as acupuncture points. Using the uterus point on the ear, look up an auricular chart and find that uterus chart point on the ear. And then the conception vessel, also the meridian that starts right up below your chin, and it runs all the way down to the pubic bone. Well, the section of it from the umbilicus, your belly button, down to the pubic bone is good to stimulate to help with hormonal balance. It's all worth a try. It's all put together. You manage their stress, you look at their diet, you manage their nutrition, and then for each of these, there's some additional herbs you might be looking at. Dysmenorrhea, painful periods, essential fatty acids. Deficiencies of omega-3 can cause spasming and contraction. And this happens right around the time of the period because there's extra prostaglandins that are coming out. And if you don't have enough of the EFAs to balance out those prostaglandins, you're going to get spasm and inflammation. Magnesium, really important for relaxing the uterus. High levels of magnesium would be needed. Some people do really well with progesterone cream because what's happening is they don't have enough of it and they have an estrogen dominance, so it's out of whack. Usually I don't do that right away. That would be something that I would look at after maybe looking at a test or trying some other things. A castor oil pack put over the belly, over the uterus area, can be very helpful for reducing pain of periods. There's an herb called cramp bark that's very effective for a lot of people. There's another herb called black haw. And what I was taught about black haw is that it's extremely effective for about 90% of the people. If you have someone try black haw and they try it 2 months in a row and it doesn't work, it's not going to work. It'll work quickly and it'll work well if it's working. And Jamaican dogwood, again, it's another anti-spasmodic, anti-inflammatory type herb that calms everything down and helps them to have their periods go more smoothly. PCOS is polycystic ovarian syndrome. And the interesting thing about it is most people don't present feeling like they have cysts on their ovaries. And some people don't even have active cysts on their ovaries. But it's a syndrome that is created as a result of insulin resistance and excess insulin in the system. It causes a dominance of male hormones in a female. So the woman might have high levels of testosterone and or DHEA. And this creates havoc in her estrogen and progesterone balance. They oftentimes are missing periods. I'm working with somebody who's 12 years old. She had a couple of periods and now they're gone. Horrible case of acne and a roll of fat around her belly. And we're working on getting her to be compliant with an insulin resistance diet, but she needs more than that at this point. She's doing fairly well, not 100% on the diet, but she's not seeing the results that she thinks she should or that I think she should. We're working with her. The next step is adrenal support. They ordered an adrenal stress kit. Of course, I haven't seen the results of it yet. So they actually, once they order it, they actually have to do it. And once they do, I'll be looking at that. Insulin resistance diet, but also the nutrients. Acupuncture can be helpful for PCOS as well. But avoiding grains, especially gluten, and avoiding all high glycemic foods is super important for someone with PCOS. I highly recommend managing people with PCOS using a glucose meter, because that'll help you to design the exact right diet. The person I'm working with has a needle phobia. She's 12. She won't do it. Her dad has diabetes. So it's definitely a genetic factor in there. Mom went on the same diet as she did, and mom's down like 30 or 40 pounds and is feeling great. Big sister went on the same diet that she did, and she's feeling a lot better, not perfect. So there's something going on here that we're looking for, and I'll tell you some of the other things we're looking at. For the estrogen and progesterone balance, sometimes I don't like to give progesterone, especially to teenagers, until I have to. So I've been doing Chase Tree. That's Vitex agnus cactus. And that is an herb that helps to increase the levels of progesterone. So she's been on that for a few months, hasn't seen major improvement. There's others that we can use as well. Essential fats are critical. Critical because they're important for maintaining the whole integrity of that system. There are some vitamins like the B vitamins and vitamin C that are really important. The chromium and the magnesium, the C, the vanadium if need be, the EFAs are really, really important. And then there's been a lot of studies using inositol, myo-inositol. Inositol is often considered part of the B complex family. And myo-inositol has had really promising results with people with PCOS and actually getting pregnant within a couple of cycles when they'd been trying for many years. And then spearmint, that seems to be an old kind of a village type of a remedy, but there seems to be a lot of evidence that it works really well, making spearmint tea. So it's a challenging situation. PCOS is not going to clear overnight, but it's critical that they be on an insulin resistance type diet, avoid grains and gluten, and keep up their adrenal support. So let's move from PCOS into loss of libido, sex drive. What kills the sex drive? Stress. Stress is a big time killer of sex drive. We've talked about why. Low estrogen, xenoestrogens. Estrogen dominance on the alpha side. Low testosterone, low DHEA, low thyroid. All of these things can affect, all of these hormone imbalances will affect the sex drive. And your job is to try to figure out why. Emotional instability, poor hydration, lubrication. If you're not hydrated well, you're not going to have good lubrication. If you don't have good lubrication, you're not going to be in the mood for sex. Birth control pills, majorly disrupt. It's creating havoc in your endocrine system. Alcohol, toxins affected. Anemia. If your blood is short of iron or B12, or you're not making enough red blood cells, and you don't have enough hemoglobin and oxygen-carrying capacity, you don't have the energy for sex. Obesity and anorexia both can contribute to low sex drive. Anorexia, because you get so nutrient-depleted that it kills sex drive and just about everything else functioning in your body. And medications, antidepressants, and depression. So the strategies for reviving libido are general strategies for improving hormone balance, and then there's some extra stuff. So, of course, managing stress, adrenal support, daily self-care. If you're not taking care of yourself, you're not going to want to be intimate with somebody else. Whole foods, high green, lots of nutrients from your foods, avoiding the processed foods and all the stressors on the systems. We've talked about these all along. These are the general things. But also you can do vitamin E locally in the vagina to help rehydrate tissue and increase sensation. There are other things you can use inside as well, coconut oil or other kinds of lubricants. There's a lubricant called Vital Vulva, which is got some wild yam and some vitamin E and some other things in it. And the other thing that can be really helpful for increasing libido is vaginal hormones. And one in particular, DHEA, has been found to dramatically increase the sex drive in a very short period of time, like in a matter of a month. Estriol works by helping with the dryness and the atrophied tissue, and that in itself can increase the libido. And then finally, bioidentical hormones, bi-estrogen, two estrogens. It's generally, it's estradiol and it's estriol together. And you do it in a proportion. Oftentimes it's an 80-20 proportion. Sometimes it's different based on the lab tests. And finally, there is a bunch of herbs, and I'm going to share with you what these herbs are. Kind of crowded on the next page, but you'll have it as a reference. Maca, we know that improves both male and female hormone balance, supports the adrenals, increases stamina, helps with erectile dysfunction, and increases sex drive and fertility. If you're starting somebody out, have them try a teaspoon a day, put it in a smoothie, and increase it up to 4 teaspoons a day. This may seem like a lot, but it really can be effective if they're having problems. Cardamom. It's a really nice carminative, a spice that helps with digestion. And it's considered an aphrodisiac in some cultures and works well with maca. Basil is reported to increase circulation and stimulate the sex drive and boost fertility. and it was once used by the Mediterranean prostitutes as a perfume to attract customers. If that ain't going to be libido boosting. Saw palmetto can be used for both men and women. It's often considered a prostate herb, but it's more than just a prostate herb. It actually can help to boost the libido, and it's rich in fatty acids and phytosteroids. It works by inhibiting the conversion of testosterone to DHT. There's some anecdotal evidence that it can help with hair loss, right? Because remember, we talked male pattern baldness gets stimulated by high levels of DHT. And then finally, we have pumpkin seeds, which are good foods for the libido, because it's high in zinc, which is important in testosterone production, but also they're a good source of omega-3 fats. And omega-3 fats are really, really common cause of loss of libido. Ashwagandha, which helps to not only support your adrenals and your thyroid and the liver and blood sugar, it helps to increase sexual energy. And now I know why I gravitate towards ashwagandha. I have it just about every day. Ginkgo helps to increase the flow to your brain and to other parts of your body. So it will help you to have the blood flow in place for going through the stages of the sexual response. There's an herb called Muraripuama, and it's been used to increase libido and improve sexual potency. I can't say I've ever done it, I've ever used it, but I did found a reference to it and I thought it was kind of interesting. Sarsaparilla contains some stored saponins and it promotes the production of testosterone and progesterone. It's also studied for its ability to support your performance. Siberian ginseng, that affects the hypothalamus to modulate hormone release, so it can have an effect on sex drive. And so those are some good herbs. I'm going to give you some more herbs in a bit, and you can use these as references. You can play with them and see what works well for you. And we're going to talk about menopause. Menopause should not be a disease process. Menopause should be what happens when your periods stop? What happens when you transition from the reproductive years to the non-reproductive years? There's no reason at all that we should have in a healthy person have any symptoms at all of menopause other than the period goes away. Maybe get erratic for a while, that's kind of normal, and then it goes away. Hot flashes, not normal. Mood swings, weight gain, it's not supposed to happen. In fact, what I've read is that in other countries, they don't even have a name for the period of menopause. It's not a syndrome. It's not something they go to the doctor for. It's just a passage, a rite of passage. You get your period when you're 13, you lose your period when you're 50, and it's just a rite of passage into a new era of life. Personally, I found it to be a very powerful experience. I did not have any symptoms of menopause. I did not have night sweats, hot flashes, irritability, crankiness, fatigue, headaches, changes in skin, urine or bladder problems, bloating and gas, nail, hair, tooth problems. Definitely had the changes in the menstrual cycle. I went from spotty every 2 to 3 months to 6 months and then gone. And then breast tenderness. That I had a little bit of for just a short period of time. Didn't have the mood swings, anxiety, tension, agitation, increased heart rate, insomnia, loss of libido, weight gain, depression, osteoporosis. These are all things that can happen as a result of going through menopause when you're out of balance. Remember we said earlier that the adrenals produce some background amounts of estrogen and progesterone, and it's supposed to continue as you get into menopause. If your adrenals are shot, that doesn't happen. So you have a really bumpy road going through menopause. And for some women, it lasts for a decade or more. So you're going to get tired of reading the same stuff over and over. But the basic approach to everything is the same. You got to get the stress under control. You've got to support their adrenals. You've got to optimize their digestion. Avoid alcohol and caffeine. Get them hydrated. Get them moving. Have a nighttime ritual so that you don't just go from the fire to the bed. They transition so that they have more of an opportunity to sleep well. Fatty acids, minerals, especially zinc, selenium, magnesium, and iodine, vitamins, especially B, C, and D, herbs, lubrication, progesterone cream, and bioidentical hormones. So I would try all the diet and lifestyle things. And if they're still having symptoms, I mean, to an extent, if they're really, really miserable, you might want to intervene symptomatically. But if they're still having symptoms, you can look at progesterone cream over the counter or getting them prescribed bioidentical hormones. But you really want to make sure that when they do the bioidentical hormones, that they have it done right. They have it by a doctor who knows how to assess. That's just not going, oh, well, we'll give her this. That really knows what they're doing, because they can be really, really powerful. Some herbs for hormonal regulation. Dan Quai is always looked at as a hormonal herb, and it's actually really not. It really works on the level of the liver and helps to regulate the estrogen levels by affecting liver detoxification. It contains phytoestrogens that bind the estrogen receptors in your body, and then is equivalent to raising the level of estrogen. It contains vitamins E, A, and B12. Dan Quai can be used to relieve hot flashes and vaginal dryness, to reduce mood swings and stress related to menopause, and then also it helps to move the bile. And if somebody has what's called a dry constipation in Chinese medicine, the Dan Quai can help. We've also got maca for hormone regulation. And it's an adaptogen. It has high levels of calcium, magnesium, zinc, and iron, B1, B2, B12, C, and E. So maca is a really good nutritional source as well as a hormone balancer. It helps you to strike up a balance between estrogen and progesterone, reduces hot flashes and vaginal dryness, increases libido, and improves erectile dysfunction. Maca can also decrease the effects of memory loss and osteoporosis through some yet unknown mechanisms. More hormone herbs. These are the ones that are popular. Red clover, it's actually a phytoestrogen, has vitamins, minerals, calcium, magnesium, niacin, potassium, vitamin C. It affects your moods. It's phytoestrogens. 44% decrease in people's hot flashes in 8 weeks. It's not a short-term solution, but it can definitely be helpful. High amounts of calcium slow down or even prevent bone loss when you're taking red clover. So the Vitex increases progesterone by stimulating luteinizing hormone, which stimulates estrogen to produce hormones. Vitex is thought to normalize excessive prolactin levels and promote fertility. So it's really good, and we use it with people with PCOS to help bring up the level of progesterone in relationship to the other hormones. It can be used for hot flashes, depression, and vaginal dryness. I usually think of it more as supporting a woman in her luteal phase. But again, all of these herbs have a gazillion different things that they go by. The one that I was adding before, black cohosh. Black cohosh is also known as Semicifuga racemosa. The anecdotal evidence for its use in menopause, there's no like scientific thing that says this is how it works and it works consistently. So there's more to it than meets the eye. The anecdotal evidence is that it reduces the severity and frequency of hot flashes, affects mood swings, prevents vaginal atrophy, turns around depression, and reduces anxiety. All of those things. However, as popular as black cohosh is as a quote-unquote menopause herb, the mechanism is largely unknown. It's controversial. It's thought to maybe be an estrogen mimic, but it doesn't increase the risk of uterine or breast cancer, which is good. So there are triterpene glycosides, known as actin and semifugoside, plus saponins and acids in the black cohosh. And we're not exactly sure how that works, but stay tuned. If you want to take black cohosh and you don't want to take any tablets or capsules, then consider getting the dried root powder. You can get some of that probably at Mountain Rose Herbs. And if you take 20 to 40 milligrams of the dried root powder twice a day, you can have a really good result. So this is the biggest bane. You get to an age and it's like, I don't care if I have joint pain, but I don't want to have wrinkles. I hear that. I don't care about that, but I don't want to have wrinkles. I don't want to look old. So we get vain about it. And the signs of imbalanced aging kind of creep up on you. It's all of a sudden, it's like, huh, where did that come from? Who is that person in the mirror? It may start with wrinkles. It may go to dry and brittle hair and graying hair, if it's not already. So another sign of imbalanced aging, fatigue and lack of motivation, loss of sex drive, mood fluctuations, weight gain or weight loss resistance, dry and sagging skin, weak bones, and sluggish and inefficient digestion. These are all symptoms that can come about as we age imperfectly. So what can we do about it? Can we turn back the hands of time? Well, there are ways. You can use bioidentical hormones to restore your hormone balance if need be. These are synthesized from plants. There's triest, which is all three, E1, E2, E3. There's biest, which is just E2 and E3. Progesterone, testosterone, and DHEA. Well, progesterone's readily available as liquid drops or as a cream that you put on your skin. Biest and triest, well, biest at least, an equivalent of biest is available through a couple of places. I'll show you where to get it. I have a list. Online, progesterone's easy to come by, right? You just get the little tube or whatever. And DHEA is real easy to get. So the only one on this list that you're not able to get as an over-the-counter consumer is the testosterone. You need to use a compounding pharmacy if you're going to have bioidenticals done. And your doctor would call the orders in and get those things so that you could pick them up. And I think it's important to keep monitoring. Okay, if somebody's on a bioidentical hormone, you owe it to them and yourself to be testing them to see if it's still valid. You want to make sure that they don't take a hormone longer than they need to, or that they're not taking the right dose. You want to check, and I recommend quarterly checks when you have somebody who's on bioidenticals, even if they're going to the doctor getting the prescription, but mostly working with you. And then weaning off is important. It's really important to know when a person is going to be ready to start taking down the dose of what they were taking and move on. So let's just take a look at a few places where you can get bioidenticals. Mountain Rose has black cohosh root powder. Rhubarb root is effective for hot flashes. And I would say just tread lightly with rhubarb because it's very, very high in oxalates, oxalic acid. So it may be an issue. May not be. So bioidentical hormones. There's a company called Bezweken that sells a line of them. Used to be you only could get them through that company if you were a practitioner. Now they actually have them available. I can go to this HelenPenzanti.com, do a search on or do a / Bezweken, and everything will come up. And these are, there's 8 different hormone combinations you could see. There's a couple of oral and there's a couple of topical. And basically, see what's going on with your hormones and see what the best place to start would be. When you're working with somebody, I would be careful about putting them on the phytoestrogens and the phytoprogesterones unless you've done some testing to see. You do not want to have them take something and cause them to have too much estrogen. That would not be good. The products that they have, one is a Phyto-B, which is an oral progesterone and has a little bit of estrogen in it too. The next one is Ostoderm, which is a topical cream. And this topical cream, you put it on the skin, you can put it on the labia, you can put it on the inner thighs. And the Ostoderm generally has both estrogen in the form of estriol. So it's pretty easy to place an order. Ostoderm V is actually a same formulation as the Ostoderm, but it's formulated with some extra different lubricants so that it can be applied vaginally. And that's a combination of 20% E2 and 80% E3, which is good. Progynol is the cream, or actually I think it's a roll-on these days, and that would be your cream. Then they have Progynol for men, Progynol B, and then the estriol. The estriol, I'm not sure, is available anymore. The estriol suppositories, we tried to look that up and order that recently for someone, and it didn't seem to be there. So I don't know if it's a temporary backlog or whatnot, but if you find that you're working with somebody and they've had really miserable vaginal dryness and atrophy, and they don't want to take hormones, if you convince them that this is a plant-based supplement that happens to have estriol in it, that it can be really, really super beneficial. So that's the Bezwecken products. There are also products that DrHelenPensati.com has on her own site, and I just made a list of a copy of them and the how much is in it, and I just copied it from her chart. Okay, so you can go through that and see if any of that is something that you want to do. And finally, we've got the Ask Dr. Helen page again, the OTC page. And there's bioidentical progesterone, different kinds that she makes on her own label. Some of these are the Bezwecken's mixed in, and these are plenty of things that you can try and work with on your patients. If they show up with a progesterone issue and you're really clear that it is that, you want to supplement with, say, Beforigon, then you could do that. So the name of the product is listed, the product form, how much progesterone per jar or tube, how much wild yam, how much phytoestrogen per jar. Some of them have none, but if you look at this page, the first page, let me go back to it. Yeah, if you look at the first page, quite a number of these products have some phytoestrogen. You'll see like 40 milligrams per half teaspoon, 58 milligrams per half teaspoon. They're all biased, so that means estriol and estradiol. 58. So the highest one has 60 milligrams per 8 pellets. You do want to be careful about supplementing estrogens orally. There's certain reactions and stimulations of ER alpha that you get that you don't get when you take it topically. So actually, it's really recommended that you avoid taking the estrogens orally unless you really are with somebody who knows what they're doing and is really tested well. Better to do the creams, and you're going to get the receptor regulation the way you want it too. I don't know how good these prices are. I did this a while ago, but it's definitely a good summary. At least you know where to go and what to look for and what's possible when you're working with somebody. For each of your clients that you're working with is to take the tools that you have and try to, the most simplified way you can, get them going. You don't have to get into all those fancy nutrigenomics pathways with them right away. You'll drive them nutty. Get the basics going. Get the basics going. They'll go a long way, really. And that's why I kept repeating that same stuff on every one of those protocol slides, is because it really does start there. It starts with reducing the stress. It starts with reducing not just the mental and emotional stress and your response to that, but all the stress on your body. Some of the stresses we can't avoid, the EMFs in the environment, the airwaves, right? The wireless in the airwaves and all those things like that. And the food supply we have control over. And we have control over what kind of water we drink. So you control those things that you can and you make changes, and it makes a huge difference. Huge difference. I just keep being reminded of it when people will just come to a call, a preview call for something, and they just put a couple of things into place and they're like thrilled to death with the results, right? Not everybody gets those results because not everybody has the same genetics. Not everybody has the same early childhood experiences that really put like deep stresses and wounds. But it doesn't mean that it can't be overcome. It's just a matter of working through it and just seeing it as positive, setting the intention and stepping into that intention. And it's all about that. It really is. And when you find yourself talking about this went wrong and that went wrong and that kind of thing, catch yourself and stop and think about how to reframe it. Because it's what's going on, it's what's playing in the background all the time that creates the milieu of our body. Not just the words we say. You can basically catch yourself in this spinning around thing and not saying anything to anybody, so you don't really catch yourself. And then when you speak, it comes out. But you could have been in that spin for the last several hours, wreaking havoc on your body. So it's starting to hear the inner conversations as well as the outer conversations. Listen to the tone of your voice when you speak. And this is something to teach your people. And I don't mean to be preaching to you guys, but it's something that I've learned that I think is so valuable, is listen to your own voice. First, you'll just listen to the outer voice with your ears. And you'll go, huh, if I were listening to me and this was somebody else, I would think that person was a bit upset and stressed right now. How can I shift the situation? How can I look at it differently so I don't feel so stressed, so I don't sound so stressed? It It's not just a matter of fake it till you make it. It's a matter of really working and transforming those emotions. One of the things I gave in the Before Be Gone program was something called the emotional ladder. That is not something I made up. It's something I adapted from Abraham Hicks. And it's like these emotions and the kind of sequencing, the priority. At the top is bliss, right? Bliss, joy, everything, gratitude, love, and it goes down. And at the very bottom is powerlessness. That's the worst possible feeling. Being angry, being depressed, that's better than being powerless. Being angry is way better than being depressed. And so it's a process of helping you to move up the emotional scale. It's something that you can do with your clients without them even realizing you're doing it. And after you've been doing it for a while and you can pull them out of the trenches, then you can start to share with them what you're doing. And you can teach them how to do it themselves. It takes practice. It's not something you can necessarily hand to somebody to do when they're in the state of powerlessness. But it's something that you can listen for and you can shift. Really important stuff. And we all can do this. And I think a lot of that is a testament to why I am able to get so much out of myself in terms of work and get so many hours out of the day and still feel good and still feel positive. And I want that for you.